everybody to SIG 11's show, computer application show and tell. I want to clarify that SIG 11 is not the mentor group, it's the computer applications group. So now, those of you who read the signs and got confused, I was asked to officiate at this event about 5 minutes ago because the tall, skinny guy with the long ponytail who is listed is scheduled to be two other places simultaneously. And so I take no responsibility for anything that occurs. I'm just supposed to tell you. And, of course, those of you who know me know that I know nothing about computer applications anyway. We have several, looks like, very interesting things on here, including some people who apparently didn't know they were presenting other people's work. But we'll see how this works out. We're going to begin with Alan Cantor, who will be, in fact, presenting his work.
Thank you. Some macros are very complicated. This is an example of one which is extremely simple and one that I wish I'd thought about years ago. The client...
Let's make you live on the screen.
It's live on the screen?
No, this was turned off. Yeah, but it was on standby.
Should I press the magic button?
Okay, this is waiting. Sorry. So for those of you who don't realize what account which technology we do, these light bulbs have a 200-hour lifespan and cost $500. So you don't want to just turn them on and off.
Should we push the magic button?
It's been done.
Yes, Dennis did it. Okay, should we try the magic button again? There it is. There it was.
Okay. Now we need input.
I just did.
Try it again. Should be.
Just goes and flashes on.
Presentation mode is off. What is that?
There we go.
Ah! Okay.
You're live!
All right. Okay, to recap. Complicated macros, simple macros, simple macro. Text macros for changing folders. My client was a lawyer, and her disability was repetitive strain injuries and arthritis. And her difficulty was due to excessive keyboard and mouse use, especially on her typical 60 hours per week job kind of things, that the way that she worked. The accommodations were set in place. I did a lot of modifications, both me and someone before me, including a roller mouse, a vertical mouse, which she switched between the two, speech recognition training, voice macros, and keyboard macros, and keyboard-only training. She found using the mouse more difficult than keyboarding, and at a certain point in the process, she was using speech recognition primarily for text entry, using the keyboard for some things and using the mouse for other things. So the idea was to distribute the load of computer work through three different modalities. But there was one task that she continued to find very, very difficult. And in her work, perhaps 20, 30 times a day, she had to save files, attachments, or emails into folders. And there were 6 folders that she primarily had to save things into. And she was finding this very, very slow, very, very frustrating. the standard way to do that is using the Save As dialog box, and I'll just show something about that in a moment. The problem seemed to rely, first of all, these folders she was saving to were on two different drives, all over her computer, one on a shared drive, one on the C drive. And part of the issue was the Windows folder structure, which is not the most intuitive thing in the world, where this is C colon backslash blah, 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 is where you have to save, she'd have to save things to just to begin. And plus, there's the issue of the various Save As screens. For example, in Microsoft Word, it looks something like this. The Save As looks something like this. In Outlook, it looks something like this. And in Adobe Reader, it looks something like this. And although they bear a resemblance to each other, they're all a little bit different and operate in slightly different ways. So, for example, the buttons over here, this one has a back button over here. This one, it's grayed out over here, and this one doesn't have one at all. These two windows over here, these two dialog boxes have a place where you can put some shortcuts, but yet this one doesn't have it. So for her, choosing a folder was physically demanding and cognitively demanding. It was physically demanding because when she was trying to do it, I tried to show her the keyboard way, which was easier for her, but it was just too much to remember. It's quite a task for anyone who's ever tried to do it. And cognitively, because she had to remember where all her different folders were. And it was taking her, I timed her at about 30 to 45 seconds for changing folders for each time she wanted to save a file. So the solution I ended up trying out with her was to use Macro Express, which is a Windows scripting tool. And what I did was I said to her, can you come up with, you know, two or three or four letter codes for each of the six folders? So she did. CC for current clients, DP for decisions pending, ADM for administration, and so on. So she invented this list and she handed them to me. And then what I did with them was I wrote six short key macros. And a short key macro is a macro that is activated by typing text as opposed to something like pressing a hotkey. And they come in a number of flavors, prefix and suffix. Suffice to say that a suffix macro, text macro, is one like an autocorrect, where you type something, then you press the space bar or the enter key, and that will trigger it. But I decided that because she was using things like CC, which might be text that she might actually have to type in part of her life as a lawyer, we used a prefix short key macros. And in a prefix macro, the model is this. You have a one or two or three letter prefix, which I usually use as Q if it's a one-handed left-handed typist, but usually I use the comma. And this is how it would look on the screen. You type the prefix key plus the code, and we're going to do it with CC. There's the prefix, types the C, then the C, and that three-letter sequence, character string, triggers the macro. So she types comma, CC, and at that point it automatically fires. So we had comma CC for current clients, comma DP for decisions pending, comma ADM for administration, and three others. So first of all, I haven't told you how the macros work yet, but let me tell you how they don't work. They do not work by sort of trying to have the macro software control the mouse and clicking all over these screens, which is what she was doing before and what she was most comfortable with, because it's not a, using macros to click on things on the screen tends to be very, very unreliable. Besides, we discovered there was a much better way to do this in the end. Yes, you can see that difference in the screens that made it virtually impossible for the program that she's using, because even if we were going to click, we would have to find different ways to click. So here's how the macro does work. When any of these Save As dialog boxes receives keyboard input focus, it's always the file name over here that that has focus. So in that, I instructed her, type in your code. So she would type comma, C, C, and then once that was done, the macro would automatically fire. As part of the macro, actually a characteristic of a property of the short key macros is that the first thing it does is it by default, it deletes the text that is already being put in there. So the C goes away, the C goes away, the comma goes away, and it's replaced by other text. And the text that I used was the full path to the folder that she wanted to go to, which in some cases were like 40, 50 characters long. So the script for it is, the code is comma CC. When you type CC, it replaces is all this nonsense over here, the full path, plus the enter key. And when that's done, it automatically and immediately, in a fraction of a second, goes to the folder that she wants to be in. Concurrent cases in this case. Okay. So the results were, these were very easy to remember. I spoke to her a week afterwards. She had no trouble memorizing these six macro codes because she had invented them herself. It was very much less physically taxing because she wasn't clicking around with the mouse as much. They're also extremely reliable. When you come up with a macro that is really reliable, you've got something that's really good, especially when it's very simple like this one. But the other thing is that they turned out to be much more versatile than I originally imagined. First of all, she began to use the same macros not only to save files, but to open files. In the open dialog box, you use the same macros, and they work exactly the same. And a second way they proved to be versatile, and I haven't shown this to her yet, I discovered that I could go into my browser, any browser, and in the address line, you could type the macro, and your browser will go into the folder. So if you're in your browser, you don't have to switch to another application to find files that you're looking for. So that was a text macro, very, very simple to implement. It took about half an hour to create the six macros. I estimate the cost was about $65 plus the cost of the macro software, which her employer had already paid for. Thank you.
Okay, our next, get over here where the microphone can hear me, even if the rest of you could anyway. Is development of an accessible wireless iPod remote control by Peter Newman. So you're on.
Well, thanks for having me, folks. I can't claim that my project's going to be quite as clever and useful as Alan's was. That was a nice one. Mine is a little more fun, I suppose. Blame it on Kirk if you're bored, because this is it's a little off topic, but he invited me to be in the session, so... So we'll give it a try. Bear with me for just a second here. Oh, okay. So maybe it's already up here. And I'm going to have to go. Well, you'd think, but no. Yeah, let me see if it's on there instead. Bear with me for just a second, folks. I could use that. Technology, wonderful. No, that's not it. Okay. Sure, it looks like it's not recognizing my desk. Yeah.
This is technology. Yep.
Well, this could be shorter than I thought.
If you unplug and replug sometimes.
Yeah, I've done that once or twice. I could unplug the G that's back here. Sorry, what? Yeah. I can...
If you guys want to swap positions, I will run and see if I can't find it and take another flash drive.
Okay. Good. I get to delay it then.
Let me. I'll be assertive and just try this.
All right.
How many holes do we have in the back?
There's two over here and one over there.
Oh, maybe there's actually two there. I don't know if you can sneak it underneath it.
That's a little snug under there. Mm-hmm. Try the other way out. That might make a difference.
It's not making any little ding dong sound.
No, it's not seeing it there.
Yeah. Well, why don't we could eject the G and. Usually got a LED on there too.
Yeah.
Flash worked the other day, so I think it's all right.
Okay, well, let's move on to. Okay. We'll come back.
All right.
Sorry, hopefully.
Let's crack it open.
It's in the show and tell.
Oh, no. Text to speech, boot apps, giveaway today. I haven't seen that any online. No. He has my flash drive too, so I'm. Kirk has. I gave my flash drive, so I don't have it with me. Let's go get him. Is he talking about something else? We got anybody else in the mix?
Let's see. Shall we try the click and type freeware? It was on here.
Show and tell slide. Let's see what this is. No.
Which? Is Kathy here? Who's presenting it? Oh, yeah, she went running looking for the flash drive. So, no. And Kirk is the last person on the list, so.
Okay.
So should we make shadow puppets or something to keep you entertained?
Well, hopefully he'll come flying in.
See, I'm glad I started out by telling you this isn't my fault, because I didn't even know if I was going to be taking credit or blame.
Yeah, I want to tell you. Well, let's wait.
We will wait a moment or two.
Is there more than, there's not more than one flash drive in there, is there?
No, just one flash disk.
This guy, same thing. Huh?
What's that one?
Let's see. Empty.
That had nothing in it. Yeah. That's probably the built-in card reader port.
Oh.
Has anybody discovered anything really new and exciting they want to share while we're waiting for a presentation?
Yeah, so
yeah, but we don't want to take somebody else's presentation.
So there's no. No. Which one? I'm sorry. Is that my flash? Is this my flash?
From Kirk.
Oh. Okay, so, yeah, we'll try it here. Good flash, that's a good sign. It did flash, didn't you see a blue light when you plugged it in?
Yeah.
There's a red light. Wakey, wakey, wakey. It's noticing that it's here. We've got a light on it. Or it could be Windows weirdness.
Yeah.
It's not refreshing. It still thinks the other one's in there. Yep, that's what I think. I did that a couple of times. The computer has just gone off to weird land. So we'll just start it up again, and hopefully it'll come home. What a great demonstration of reliable technology.
So you want to get...
Your stuff is here. So we're rebooting because we swapped drives and it didn't even notice.
Oh, no. Well, my stuff is on all of these.
Uh-oh.
This is Kirk's.
Let's see.
It's not Kirk's.
Whose is it?
Well, we rebooted and now we've got a username password issue.
So let's get another laptop.
We've got another laptop.
That shouldn't make any difference. Oh, never mind. We have that info.
And mine's on here. Do you have the other ones? Because Peter couldn't find his.
I just knew to her which should be on here. I didn't realize people were giving me their own account. I knew you had yours, but I thought I'd put it back here.
Okay.
So.
Okay. That's right. Well, let's have Peter.
Another laptop? Just to keep us confused?
Yep. Had the information here.
Yeah. Sure. No, all I have is a Word document, right?
There's a PowerPoint, too.
You have?
Yes. Okay. I didn't send that to you? Yes, not.
All I got was your original idea was a Word document.
Okay. No,
so if you've got your PowerPoint, you need to load that.
Yeah, now that we're rebooted, we should be able to do that.
Okay.
And mine's on here. It's not on... We couldn't find it on here.
This is...
Oh, okay. So this is... The only place it is here is right there.
So let's take this one out, plug yours in. Oh, that looks good. Things are changing.
Okay. It's recognizing things and updating accordingly. Good. There's green thumb. Good.
Okay. So this is you?
That's me.
Okay.
Terrific. So I can just run right up here.
The magic happens.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So now we're back to the wireless iPod interface.
Okay. Thanks for your attention, everyone. Like I said, I don't know if mine's going to be quite as clever and useful as Alan's was. As a point of reference, this was done as a project for a course in assistive technology and a certificate program I just completed. And it is, as you would guess, developing a remote control for an iPod for it was developed for an individual who needed to had an STI injury and wanted to increase his independence in the use of his iPod, both at home when the device was in a docking station and as well as when he was riding public transit or out in the community with headphones. The idea was to use a commercially available remote control unit and try and route the functionality into the joystick of his power chair. His background, the client was, like I said, he has a quadriplegia from a C4, C5 injury several years ago. He's an avid technology user, engineer, and gizmo guy. He had a third-gen iPod, which is a couple generations old now, but seemed to work. Like I said, he was hoping to use it on public transit or in a docking station. and control it through his wheelchair. I looked around at a few different remote controls. The iJet from AB Technologies was a nice choice because it's an RF transmission, so it can go through through walls up to, I think they claim, 200 feet range or something. That was a nice, cute little unit. And my approach was seemingly kind of simple-minded. I opened the case, and doesn't show up real well in the pictures here, but I just figured out which switch contacts were the ones I needed to access for the five buttons on the remote unit. I soldered to one side of each of those and common, and then routed it out through the case, developed a little wiring harness, suitable for plugging into an unused ECU control port on his wheelchair. Was able to assign the various functions of the iPod remote control, which included volume up, volume down, previous track, next track, and a play pause button. I assigned those to the wheelchair functions. There is actually one extra one. The play pause was put into an external switch because there's obviously only four directions in the joystick. As I said, the play pause was sent to an external switch. Doesn't show up real well, but there's a little microlight switch right next to his joystick that allows him to play pause. That's nice because when he's using it, he needs to switch modes from drive to ECU to do the track and volume control functions, but the external switch is asynchronous. He doesn't need to interrupt his driving. He can turn it on and off and turn the power on and off in order to control that. So as I show here, the remote unit itself was installed right next to his joystick, so his assistant could control it for him if necessary. The cable was routed with all the other cables under the chair, plugged into the ECU box there, secured to make sure it didn't get pinched or stretched, and seemed to work out pretty well. He was a pretty intuitive control. He reports being satisfied with it, says he uses it all the time. Because of the proximity of the switch to his joystick, he winds up actuating that unintentionally fairly often, which results in the little button cell inside the remote case. The battery gets drained fairly quickly, but I can, next chance I get, I'll move the switch for him, and we'll hopefully that should work for him. So that's pretty much it. Not real fancy, but. Anybody have any questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's make sure we.
Okay. Yeah, what are you actually presenting? Because according to this, you did a wireless iPod too.
Yeah, so you think this is going to work here? Let's see, the light's out.
That looks good.
God willing, we'll see. My computer. Come on, Nelly. Let's see. Which one would this be? This would be 80H? Yeah, I think
there you go.
Let's see.
That's novel.
Clever. Come on, you dog. Quick. If I click it fast enough, it won't run away.
There you go.
All right. So, yes, I am not presenting whatever.
Yeah, I'm not, iPod switching.
Yeah, this is another version of an adapted iPod. My name is Paul Schwartz, and I work at the University of Wisconsin Stout. And these are projects that I've wound up doing again, so I thought even though they're not rocket science, they'll have some value to some folks here. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Dave. So this first one, a lot of this spinal cord injuries, mouse stick users. So I, this guy here, he had a workstation, but he's in a wheelchair right now. He was up, but he wanted to be able to do this in bed. So with this case, we took an overbed table and just made it larger so we had a lot of space. And this thing wanted to be quick to be put aside, so we didn't get a desktop. But, of course, the trackpad and a standard keyboard on the laptop wasn't accessible for him. So we just slipped this notebook computer in this little box, and we put a tilted keyboard, this is a Cherry, with the Kensington trackball, and then twisted wire with PVC pipe for the mouse stick. So this worked well for him. He did not use speech recognition or choose to on this workstation. So it was quick, easy. You could pick it up, move it out of the way, get it back on the table. And that worked well, so then I did another one in this. And this is, I like this combination. We have a Kensington trackball, and this is the mini keyboard. There's a name for it, which I learned yesterday. I thought it was a no-name one. Is Ray in here?
Solidtech,
yeah, and I found it. It's not labeled Solidtech, at least the ones I buy. It's just this little keyboard. I like it because, like the Cherry and the other mini keyboards, they're just a standard keyboard, a left to right distance, with a hacked off number pad. But this one is actually smaller. So of course, with mouse stick users, you want to keep this really tight. So we work hard on that to try to get. There's no lip from the top of the keyboard to or the bottom of the keyboard to the top of the trackball. So it's just knifing right above that, which works well. And this here's the Acoustic Magic a voice tracker microphone using a USB version. So this kind of triple decker, or in this case with the LCD panel, works out nice. And then this one, of course, we have a desktop, so he can do all this independently, pull in, and then. I liked it so much, I did it again. So here's the triple, although this one, we just do twisted wire, and this guy's mouse stick weighed a lot more than ours in our shop, and here's one where I had to jerry-rig it, because he lives in Bayfield, Wisconsin, which is 3 hours north of where I am. So then I set it up for him, and I put his mouse stick in it, and the mouse stick holder just went, ooh. So then I realized we had to do some changes. But this combination works out well for us, so we'll do it again. But I'd love to hear what other people have to do when they have this same situation, mouse stick user, limited range of motion. This is the same guy when he's in his bed, which is where he is mostly. And since he's a mouse stick user, he had set up previously a keyboard underneath the flat panel, which is now removed because he's in bed with his head up against the pillow, that kind of range of motion and doing the old duck back to get to the all the keys, it wasn't possible for him. So we set up a Jouse for a mouth-operated joystick, Sip Puff, with speech recognition. Right here, this is our first run on it, and we have it mounted to the keyboard tray, but he changes positions constantly. He has a voice-activated EADL system to change his bed position. So obviously this is a wall-mounted LCD, so when he changes position, he would go away from the mouse stick or a Jouse. So then what we did is it came back, and there it is again. What we did was we had the Jouse, and it, of course it's the arms are about 13 inches long, which is a Manfrotto camera mount deal. So we ordered another one, not a Jouse, just this little piece here, and our shop just made this little piece to connect two arms together. So we had these double linkage to that way. It was able to get enough. To go all the way up and around, and it was that piece was only $80. It was a very cheap fix,
relationship to the whole cost. The other thing we did was mounted a VXI TalkPro microphone onto the Joust, and that's been a nice combination. So you have the cursor control, and then you have the speech recognition with the mic right there. And that's worked out well for him. So he no longer uses a physical keyboard at all in that case. And here's another one similar to that. This person wanted a page turner, and of course you recognize the Gewa page turner on this. So this woman is in a nursing home. We wanted something on a cart that could roll away and get put away and be locked up. We got our laptop. This is a Joust with the same microphone. Here's you can see the VXI TalkPro microphone just hacked off and attached. There's a little hole on the bottom side of the Joust that you can use to attach stuff to. You also see we use a Tash micro switch, and this is a scanning array so she can flip the pages of her page turner. So that one I repeated. Let's see what else I got here. This one, I like this combination. This is a policy analyst for the state agency. This Big Keys keyboard, which is those 1-inch by 1-inch keys, like those, or real key, combined with the X key stick. And I've done this. I don't have pictures of the other guys, and this was a grainy one as it is. But this combination of the X key stick with the Big Keys keyboard, it has worked out well for us. So we had, you know, open up email and all those type of things with a macro, dedicated macro switches. And this one, I don't have a picture of the consumer, but high chemical sensitivity. And so she's a homemaker, and she couldn't use a computer, couldn't do anything because her sensitivity was so great. She couldn't go out of the house type of person. When she runs out, she'd have a big mask on and stuff. In fact, when I went to her home to do the assessment, she told me what soap to wash with before I went down to her home, and don't use shampoo. And then actually when I got into the house, she was in another room, and there's like a foyer with a door. So she was talking to me, and she said, okay, take off all your clothes, and there's there's coveralls in a basket and socks that you can put over, and then this bandana. So I'm like, okay, you know, done this 16 years. And yeah, the adventures of rehab engineering, right? So. I never thought of that, but anyway, so that was the start of my assessment. And but what we came up with was because the plastics of the computer would cause problems for her, the smell of that. Even she had some grade school kids, so correcting homework, she couldn't do that with her children because the fumes from the stuff from the paper and the inks. So we got her a ductless hood that has HEPA and active carbon filters on it. So it's a little portable thing. It's about the size of this, cut off here. So she could just stick this on a table, and then, you know, we off gas it, let it sit for a while, and then she could fit the laptop in this hood or the kid's homework, and it has a negative draw to it, so it takes all the fumes out of it, runs it through the filter. So we did a number of other things, but that was the cool thing about that, plus the unusualness of having to get naked for rehab engineering. So anyway, that's what I got today. So any questions on those or stuff like that? So, yeah. Yes, you sir in the back. You know what? I'm having a shop make one. You know, I do that with the goniometer and come up with an angle, but now I'm going to have the shop, I have a request now, to make one that's a variable pitch for an assessment tool. And the only thing, you know, it's like plywood or plastic, but probably the instead of just a lip that goes across the top, I just have a lip on the outside so I can, so there's, to minimize that distance between the trackball and the keyboard right here. In fact, you might be able to see it on this one here, like if this cursor device works. So the thing is hung up on this side. We don't have a lip going the full length of that keyboard. And of course, you could Velcro it and make it free, but you know, there's no magic in it. It's frankly, you know, the guys do different things different times. I'm not actually fabricating that type of stuff. I do the napkin sketch. So. Right here.
Down there. And then at the top edge, we put a T-nut in the frame with a bolt going into it, and then you can just dial in how.
Nice, to get it right spot on. Yeah, yeah, and that's a great idea. Maybe that would probably be, instead of just an assessment tool, next one we should do that. Because if you think about that, the dude gets a different chair, then all of a sudden that angle that I said was spot on, then I've just screwed the consumer with my last design. So thanks, Ronnie. But anyway, any others? Thanks a lot for your time. Okay. So, remove hardware.
If you didn't write on it, you can just take it.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. That's good to know. Is that all the time?
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
If you're writing to it, it may not all be there yet until you say remove hardware, because it'll be buffered internally. But if you're just reading from it, take it away. You don't care if I can't remember it all.
Okay, well, I did.
Yeah, you too. I do them all the time.
Okay.
And it'll complain. You pulled us out the wrong way. So you got a moment you can jump in here,
Alex?
Sure,
I can do that.
Hey. Okay, so since we're actually, this is the first time we're out of order. Kirk's going to go next with stuff that's always on his thumb drive, which does not include everybody else's presentation.
We won't go there. So, and now we better make sure that's actually on my thumb drive, or I'm really in trouble. I had it for a minute. There it is. I was thinking of a lot of different things I could talk about. But somewhere along the way, it occurred to me that there are some things that when I'm doing tech support, setting up a computer, or especially doing an assessment, that I just work with as a standard item that I think a lot of people are not aware of. And the two tops that really do live permanently on my drive, and we're going to find out all kinds of information about the computer we're on. Now, you notice I'm not installing the software. Both of these programs will work from the drive, no installation required, so I don't have to be on administrative rights or anything to the system. I just run it from my drive. This laptop has, as you can see, we're able to find out the operating system, the versions of a whole bunch of different things. We've got a gig of memory, information about the video. Now, that's just the summary. If I want to go into a lot more detail, I can get really detailed information about the CPU, the memory, what's going on in the BIOS. For a lot of you, I don't know, that may or may not be important, but even if it's just simply being able to stick this in, run it, I hit File, Save. Excuse me. I generate a report. And I'm going to generate, all the pages or hardware, whatever. I can save that report as an HTML file on my thumb drive. Then I get home and I realize, oh, I didn't take notes on how much RAM or what kind of RAM, how fast the processor was. So a lot of times when we're doing an assessment for somebody, you look at it, you go, oh, yeah, we can run Dragon on this system, or this is more than adequate to do whatever we've decided. And then you get home and you're writing the assessment, you're writing proposal for what you need to do,
and you realize you may have forgotten to write something down. In this case, I don't even have to think about it. I stick in Everest, which I think I did. The web page should be on the handout. And this software allows me to get far more detail than you're really going to be interested in most of the time. But the nice, convenient thing is, once I stick it in, take an image of that computer, I can then come back at home and look at whatever's on there. Yeah. I think everyone heard, I hope, I'm looking to see whether or not we actually have the key repeat rate, which is actually a BIOS issue, usually. There are a lot of different places to set it. But honestly, I have to say I haven't looked for that, but I believe it would be here. I just have to poke around, because this thing really does, as you can see, take tremendous amount of detailed information. I guess rather than make everybody wait for me to check that out, short answer, I don't know. But it's worth looking into. The nice thing is, again, it's a free software, the home version. So we're kind of in a gray area, whether if I'm using it to go do an assessment on somebody, whether I should be buying the pro version, but if you're worried about it, go buy the pro version. It's not very expensive. But it's a really convenient way to be sure that when you're doing an assessment, you've got all the information about a person's system. The other question that comes up, and I think most of us have started to be pretty good at tackling antivirus and spam issues, but the question that comes to me a lot, and one of the first things I do with a system when I get on it, and somebody's complaining it's very slow, is I run this program called Starter. And similar to the other one, it gives me a lot of information, but this is only a list of just how much is being run when this computer starts up. Take a look at this, folks. You want to know why this system is slow? And it may not be slow in this case, but oftentimes it is. Or you'll be having a software conflict where you've loaded up a couple of things. One of the first places I start chasing problems if I'm having software conflicts or weird behavior is I'll go through the computer and I use this program, and I'm able to see things. What's really nice is without uninstalling something, I can disable it, but it remains in place. So if I do that, now I can actually remove something. If I know for sure nasty virus 205, well, okay, I want to delete that. But if there's something where it's got a really weird name and I have no idea what it is, or I think I know, I might want to just disable it, run everything and see if it works. This can be used also as a step between going down to safe mode, where you're able to go into the computer and turn off most of the things that are starting automatically and run the computer in otherwise normal mode, and then step by step reintroduce what's going to load on the system and find where your conflict is.
Do you have to reboot each time?
No. Well, yes, if you're having a boot issue, you do. Unless you just do our good old famous Control-Alt-Delete, where once I get my task... Oops, sorry, I mean, what I'm doing. I did say task manager, didn't I?
Yes.
Okay. So now we're into hardcore stuff, and if you're not comfortable with this, be very careful. If you do Control-Alt-Delete, Task Manager, most of us are used to looking at the application side. I only have two things running on this computer according to the application side. Now, an application technically is something that interacts with me directly, with a user. Processes are programs that may have no need to interact with the user.
And whereas there may only be one or two or not even any official programs running, the number of processes running on a system is often quite lengthy. Now, I am, sometimes framework service, okay, that may be more obvious, but what the heck is tfswctrl.exe? I don't know. I'm pretty famous for just grabbing exactly that name, hitting it on a Google search, and there are a couple of different websites. One that comes to mind is LI Utilities. I don't know if I have that right, but I never go there directly. I just punch in something like tfswcontrol.exe, and if I see one of the Google hits is LI Utilities, I go there. And it's a website that wants to sell you their diagnostic software, but they have a database of all of these weird processes and elements that might be running on your computer, and they'll describe typically what company makes it, what software it's associated with, and whether or not you can safely remove it from the startup on your system. And there's always the caveat. You might have a software that sounds and looks, you know, by name exactly like what should be a normal Windows software, but it could be a virus. So this is not dealing with virus issues at all. Be aware of that. We're not chasing viruses. What we're chasing here are software conflicts where you may have a computer that's running a whole bunch of stuff and you want to just simplify what's on that computer. And I recommend this just to play with on your own system and start seeing how much stuff is on there, and then come back 2 months later and see how much stuff has been loaded up automatically. Depending on how your web settings are and what kind of software you load on your system, there are a lot of things, especially from Internet Explorer, for example, where its native settings allow certain kinds of software to load themselves or reconfigure themselves into your system. And you may have removed it from the startup, and it will reinsert itself. So it's I think, a good tool just to get used to what can happen to a system, because, honestly, I may set up a computer and have it all set up, and I'm happy, and it works, and it's beautiful. I deliver it to the client, and a month later, nothing's working. And it has nothing to do with the software we loaded. Turns out they've been playing some kind of games that's an internet-based game or something, and it loaded a bunch of different configuration files or other services, and those are conflicting. So, starter, and I think, again, I've got that on the handout, so you should be able to find that on a website. And if you're poke around, make sure you find free versions of these things. They do have the commercial versions, which you can always go get, but so far as I was able to see, even today, the stuff is still free. You never know. Sometimes a month from now, the person finally decides to start charging for it. So I always take these things with me as opposed to relying on being able to grab them from the web, because there are a couple of programs that I really like that have gone from being freeware to commercial products. But the freeware version is still technically freeware, so I carry my older version. Questions? Yeah. Excellent point. These guys are really good. This is a product really designed for the people, the gamers that are overdriving their systems. And one of the things they do is, I don't usually end up going through this for that, but a lot of the products, a lot of the hardware that's on it, here we go. So the motherboard is from Dell, and if you wanted to find product information, they just build into this software the website for Dell, and it's a direct link. And if you need to get download for the BIOS updates, here's a link to where, at least at the release time of this software, they had that. And it has a large library for various even cards that may be plugged into the computer. So it'll say you've got this VGA card or you've got this modem, and here's the company that manufactures it and the website where that we're able to find drivers. Yeah. That's a good question. I don't think it's able to tell you what the maximum RAM is, but it can tell you. Right. So I think we ought to give this a minute, and it's going to come back for.
It'll probably show a list of slot 1 has this chip, slot 2 has this chip, slot 3 is empty.
Oh, because we're a laptop. Sometimes it doesn't always, it's not always able to catch it from here. But yes, it. I use it often to find out what speed of RAM. So it'll tell you, in this case, it's telling us what the physical memory is, but there's actually, normally under SPD you get that. And there are a couple of other places. One of the problems is there's so much information in here, you have to, depending on what you're normally looking up, you'll get used to going to certain places to look for things. And if you want to, you can have it generate your own custom reports and then just send them out as a plain text or HTML, whatever it is. And then you're able to go back and review it later without being connected to the computer. So that's the part that I really like. Yeah.
You might get over my head real quickly, but do you use the MSBig utility that comes in Windows ever? And can you compare and contrast that with Discover?
I used to use MSConfig, and if I'm right, one of the issues with MSConfig is that it's not as comprehensive as the starter program. So I don't know if many of you are used to using this program, but it's native, it's built into Windows, and it gives you a chance to do a lot of the things we're talking about with the starter program. It's a little clunkier, it's not as pretty, but it's built in, which is nice. But what I appreciate about the starter program is it actually goes to a few places where this doesn't give you information. There are some places in the registry where things can be started that are not considered startup components. So Windows doesn't give you that in MSConfig, but they can be tweaked to use a startup component. So the programs that are considered legitimate, but some of us consider them viruses anyway, things like Real Networks, Real Media stuff, or AOL Messenger, stuff like that, where it starts to insert itself into a lot of places in your computer where you can't easily remove it. It's nice to be able to use the starter program to remove it. This won't find all of the pieces they put in. The other program I wanted to show off is called Total Uninstall. I probably should have grabbed it anyway. It doesn't always live on my thumb drive, but Total Uninstall is now a commercial product, so it's no longer in the category of freeware. But what's nice where I use it is Windows Uninstall uninstalls all of the files that the software programmer said are okay to remove when you've installed something. Well, if I'm trying to get rid of a program that I think was written by somebody who's trying to get information in my system or putting a bunch of drivers in or doing things that are causing conflicts, I need to take everything out. And their programmer doesn't necessarily want me to take everything out. So Total Uninstall, you run before your computer, before you install the new software, and it takes an image of your whole registry, of all of your system folders, of all the places where something might get changed. And it takes a few minutes to do it, but then you can install a software, and as soon as you're done installing and running for the first time your new software, you run Total Uninstall, and it will look in every one of those places. Again, it takes a little time, But once it's looked through all of those places, it comes up with a list, and it says the registry was changed here, 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 and here. This program was added. This program or this file was changed. It gives you a complete list of everything that was modified. And then when you decide you have a conflict or some problem and you want to remove that software, you can use total uninstall instead of the normal uninstall process, and it actually goes through and takes all of it out. That's especially important to me when I'm looking at upgrades, because an upgrade for a software often will insert a bunch of files that I didn't want changed, but they're the same name in the same place as something prior version had. So I will actually use the total uninstall, install to a new directory, and test my new version of Dragon or my new version of whatever. And if it turns out it's just not going to work for this person on this system, I can uninstall it and take them back to where they were. So. Right. It gives you a list file. And on the nefarious side of things, I first ran into it as how to bypass a 30-day trial mode on something. So as somebody who gives out 30-day trial modes on products, I shouldn't tell you about it. But depending, people are now writing software, so it's harder to get past that. But it does give you a lot of information about what's being changed by a file. And if you're not sure how above board a software is, being able to use the total uninstall both gives you a chance to remove it, but also to see just how deep into your system they're going and are they adding a lot of things that really aren't necessary for that program. So, have other questions? Okay, great. Kathy, are you here? There she is. Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm not a real computer. Yeah. I'm really familiar with what crashes computers. But I do a lot of work for VR and for school districts, and the programs that I'm going to show, I'm just going to show you web shots because I wasn't planning on doing this. They're programs that I have found because I needed various languages. And two of the clients I've worked with came to the United States on under Agency for New Americans, so they are kind of in a limbo over who serves them. And so I had to find some stuff that was cheap that would work. Okay, there's that one. So one of the first programs is, as soon as I find where the is, Click and Type. It's a really good, fast, okay. Whoops, I don't want to do that. Yep. That one. Okay. It's free. It's from Lake Folks, F-O-L-K-S, and it's on your handout.org website. I have not, right now they haven't gone up to Vista. But they also have a designer that you can download, a separate program that you can download. You can design your own custom layouts. They have word prediction. I didn't mean to scroll back fast past the word prediction. They have their own word prediction that you can download with it. That's not bad. It's not fancy, and you can add a lot of words to it or anything. But it's a good starter. And then we go through all of this. There are the languages: Arabic, Algerian Arabic, Chinese traditional, Danish, Germans and French that are Swiss versions. What I needed was Romanian for one client, and I needed Slovak for the other one. And we could just download them. They could play with them. Both of these individuals had cerebral palsy, which is odd that it was just statistically that they were both had cerebral palsy. But anyway, those are the languages I needed. And it's free. And it's a pretty good on-screen keyboard. And supporting it has all the, in Spanish, you've got your upside down symbols and all of that. So that's the one. Yes?
When you use this with a foreign language, is it like the keyboard definition where this displays the characters, but you also need to set the system language to Slovak?
Yes.
So if you just load this keyboard, you won't be typing Slovenian.
You have to go in and change it.
And for some odd reason, Windows does that a program at a time. So if you type in your word processor in Slovenia, when you go to email, it thinks, oh, but now you're doing email, it must be English. And you have to tell it that's also.
So, thank you, because I forgot that, because we did go through all of that.
It's crazy.
Can you
but
resize it?
Yes. Yeah, it's just Dragon, which is one of the nicer things about it. But if you really wanted a custom layout, you can. They have a C and click and type designer, and I had a college student that was working, and he made up several things, custom overlays, and saved them for me, and they were great, no problems. When I went through the program, I'm going, okay, I know I didn't have enough information. So it depends on your level of experience and how easy it is to use the CNT designer, which is what they call it. So, okay, and then I can go back. And then, now I got to find it. This one is Second Speech Center. And I had to get this because it also, this one, it had a 30-day demo, free demo that you could, it showed you and said it was, 30-day free demo, try it. But when I went to it today, they don't say that. I was afraid to try to download it to see what would happen. But it, the languages it support, it has all these different voices, and they all cost separate. It's got an okay voice. It uses the Microsoft Sappy voices as a default. But it also supports several languages as a screen reader. And it's just personal preference, but it was a good try because when we got it, we put it on for an individual that needed the screen reading needed to be in Spanish. But they didn't know if they would like screen reading or not. And it was one of those, grandma came to live, and the son-in-law works at Micron that builds computer chips and computers, and he wanted her on the computer to do email, and she didn't speak a word of English. So she was kind of apprehensive, so they used a 30-day demo of this to see if she would like screen readers before they went looking for how many functions she'd need and all of that we could get for Spanish. So that's just, and that's Second Speech Center. And it's at a lot of places. Okay, I'm kind of going out of order because I wanted to show you this one. This is a website. It's giveaway of the day. Every day for 24 hours, I think it's midnight to midnight, you can download a specific program for free. It's the full version program. You accept that you have no technical support. You get no upgrades. But it's a great way to try out various things and to find some stuff that you wouldn't even know exist. And, oh dear. Oh. Let's see if it'll
show.
I'm not live. And I didn't notice it. It didn't check it. So this is just go to, it's all giveawayoftheday.com. I don't even think you have to register or anything. Let me see if I have another one.
I don't know what your experience is, but my experience has always been the thing they were giving away 3 days ago is something I would really want, and the thing that's the day I go there is not what I want.
Yeah, that's good. They did. There was one program that they had that was a DVD ripper, and they had problems with it, and they had people got on right away and complained that they couldn't get through to tech support, you know, to giveaway of the day, and they've got a patch coming. So they keep you posted on those kind of things. So that one, I just go every day and check. Yes?
Are these applications that you can download checked for spyware?
Yes.
These are provided by the manufacturer. It's sort of viral advertising. If we get this away to the people who come on the right day, they'll show it to their friends when it's not free.
Which is how I ended up with this one. Which is VideoGet, and it's a $20 shareware program. And we got this because we had two young men that used our computer lab. There was one program that they had that was a DVD ripper, and they had problems with it, and they had people got on right away and complained that they couldn't get through to tech support, you know, to giveaway of the day, and they've got a patch coming. So they keep you posted on those kind of things. So that one, I just go every day and check. Yes?
Are these applications that you can download checked for spyware?
Yes.
These are provided by the manufacturer. It's sort of viral advertising. If we get this away to the people who come on the right day, they'll show it to their friends when it's not free.
Which is how I ended up with this one. Which is VideoGet. And it's a $20 shareware program. And we got this because we had two young men that used our computer lab. They had no internet at home. And especially they didn't have high-speed streaming internet. And they went to YouTube and they got friends' videos. And there was one that I really liked that I had them download for me, just introducing the book. But anyway, they wanted a way that we could download the videos without having to have them on the internet. And this was one of the giveaway of the day free programs that I had downloaded on my computer. So we downloaded their the videos they wanted, and it lets you bring off video, YouTube, MySpace, Google Video, Yahoo Video, VSocial, all of those networks, and it supports AVI, MPEG-1. MPEG-2, WMY, FLV, MP4, 3GP, and MP3. But these are for that you can download live streaming video, and then you've got it, and you can show it for trainings, and it's a way to spread information around. And it's $20. But I got it because of the giveaway of the day. And I just go and check every day to see if they have anything I'm interested in.
So it downloads a file that would normally be streaming? Uh-huh,
yes. And I couldn't bring my computer, which is why I didn't think I'd be doing this, because they insisted that I leave my computer at the office for them to do a backup. Why would they want to do a backup? I don't know. Anyway, any questions on just these things? I guess I'm it.
Hold on.
And we got somebody trying to record this.